I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Welcome back to Radio Times. Much to the chagrin of my family and friends, I have discovered emojis and often sprinkle my emails and texts with a smiley or devilish face, a cute animal, fireworks, a heart. Embarrassing, I know, but apparently I'm not alone. Emoticons, as they're called, convey a feeling that text alone does not. So today we're going to look at the ups and downs, the pros and cons of digital communication, including emojis and emails, texts, and more, plus a call to retire voicemail at work. Let me introduce our guest. Lauren Collister is a sociolinguist for the University Library at the University of Pittsburgh, where she researches communication, identity, and technology in online communities. And Lauren Collister, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Stephen Petro. He writes the civilities column for the Washington Post and Digital Life for USA Today. He's got a book coming out called Mind Your Digital Manners, Navigating Life in an Age Without Rules. And Stephen Petro, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Glad to be back, and you broke my heart.
How did I do that?
If an NPR anchor is using emojis in emails, the world has truly come to an end.
Well, I was wondering whether that's the death knell for emojis when, you know, old aging baby boomers start using them.
I'm not calling you old or aging, but, I know with Facebook, once people of our generation started using it, the young people fled quickly,
right,
which is always a great way to make social change happen. I have this cartoon on my desk, and I'll just—it's should I use an emoji or not? It's kind of like this branching tree, and it starts off: Are you under 20? So let's say, yes. No, I'm not under 20. Are you over 65? No. Is this work related? And then it kind of goes: Do you want to lose your job? And if you want to lose your job, then it's okay to use it. So. It's a hot topic these days.
Indeed it is, which is one of the reasons we want to talk about it. To you, Lauren, how do you understand, the popularity? And I have to say, I know it's silly, but I do use them, and it seems to add a little something extra special when I send out a text or an email.
Exactly. So emoji and emoticons, their predecessors, are what linguists call discourse particles. So what these things do, they're little bits of language that add extra tone or meaning or inflection to a message. And we don't need these necessarily in spoken language because we have our voice. We can raise our voice. We can, change our pitch. We can use our facial expressions to convey what we mean. But in written language, when we just have the words there, sometimes that can be lost. And what emoji do is they act as these discourse particles that add a little extra flavor to our written text and make it a little bit more, in that case, like spoken language.
Well, does it take us back to our pre-literate ancestors, who used hieroglyphics and cave paintings in order to express themselves? Lauren?
One might be able to say something like that. Of course, emoji do not have a concrete meaning the way that some hieroglyphics do. So hieroglyphics are a language, a writing system that where a picture or a drawing corresponds to a sound. And so emoji don't really do that in the same way that hieroglyphics do. And they don't really do it in the same way that drawn pictures do either, because as many linguistic studies have found, emoji don't actually correspond to the looks on our faces. So if I'm sitting here typing an email to my friend and I type a frowny face in it, that doesn't actually mean that I'm sitting here frowning at my keyboard as I'm typing this message. What usually more means is a sad tone or perhaps being a little bit upset, but not necessarily reflective of the actual face that I'm making. So emoji are something a little different from all of these previously existing forms.
Stephen, I was reading that emojis tend to be used more by women or by girls than by men. I don't know if that's important or significant or if that sort of makes sense to you.
I hadn't heard that, but, in one way that does make sense, if we're talking about personal communications like that. I definitely know that there's a generation divide. There's really a generation gap over the use of emoji. And in fact, many of the topics that we're going to talk about today, and I, you know, I actually have a more nuanced view than I started at the top of the program because there really is a problem with the digital communications that we have in reflecting nuance and tone. And so I think that emoji can be useful tools in that. The problem is many people don't understand what's being communicated, what that emoji stands for. At the same time, when they're texting back and forth, you know, they're hunting for the right, you know, the right panda, the right this, and it really kind of slows down the communication entirely. And so when I think about the point of communication, it's really to have an interchange of ideas, which means we need to go both ways. You know, those who are putting it out need to be cognizant and respectful of those on the other end and vice versa.
Well, I like the idea of hunting for the right panda to include in your message. I mean, that, you know, that's a special thing to do for someone. And Stephen, is it emoji? Is that the plural of emoji?
You know, I might defer to Lauren on that. I believe it's emoji. Lauren?
Yeah. Can you answer that, Lauren?
I think it could go either way.
Okay.
I have heard it mostly said emoji as both singular and plural, but I, you know, as a linguist, I would accept emoji too.
And when you send, and this is perhaps an etiquette thing, so I'll put it to you, Stephen. If you send an email that's all emojis, is it the right etiquette to respond in emoji, or can you respond in text? Or are there rules about this stuff?
Well, that's a great question. I haven't had that one before. You know, a general rule that I have is you should respond in the same medium that a message has come in. So, for instance, if you've received a text, you should not call back. So I guess I would extend that to, you know, if you've received emoji, you should try your best to respond that way. But if it's going to, you know, take you days, I think that's not a good idea.
Lauren, you know, I like the way human beings are so creative. And one of the things I came across is someone made Moby Dick into Emoji Dick and apparently took, you know, some version of Moby Dick and used emojis to tell the story. I was also seeing that Jordan Peele, that's of the comedy duo Key and Peele, apparently retold the story of The Shining using 96 emojis in a single tweet. And apparently that got, you know, retweeted untold numbers of times. But it is interesting how playful and clever and creative people can be with what appears to be sort of limited language.
Right. And it is limited language. And, you know, when you look at something like, you know, the Moby Dick translated into emoji, if you know what the story is that you're looking at, it certainly is much easier to interpret than if you're looking at a sequence of emoji and trying to figure out what this person is trying to say to you. So it is really playful and very creative, but it is it's like in any work of art, it definitely takes a lot of skill to do, and not everybody can do it, and not everybody can understand it either, and it's going to mean different things to different people. So I wouldn't say that novels are going to suddenly become all written in emoji, but
why not?
It would be very hard to understand them, for one thing, the way we understand written words. But I do see these interpretations and these creative, almost artistic interpretations of these works that are just very interesting and very fun to read.
Stephen, do you get a lot of emoji questions at the Washington Post?
I do get a lot of emoji questions. And, you know, one of the bigger ones or the most prevalent is it appropriate to use in a work scenario, a professional scenario? And I think there really is a divide there. And I was going to ask you, Marty, you know, when you're using them, do you use them with your colleagues at the station and NPR, or do you use them with family and friends? I think, you know, there's kind of the standard line, which I agree with, that they're less professional than words. And so my counsel generally is in a professional context or business context to stay with your words and actually to avoid even the text abbreviations that are often used so commonly. But it's different, you know, with family, with friends, where you want to have more text or more emotion in those messages.
Well, I cannot tell a lie. I've not sent an emoji to my boss, but there are probably a select group of my fellow colleagues here at WHYY who have gotten an emoji from me. So, true confessions.
I'm sure they love them, and they're for sale on eBay now.
Well, yes. And I noticed, too, and Lauren, just sort of, I guess, increasing the vocabulary for emojis or emoji. There's something like 700 or maybe I'm sort of lost count of how many there are today. But there are efforts to increase the amount of emojis so that people, I guess, can be more expressive.
Certainly, and also in an effort to incorporate more cultures and more languages into the inventory of emoji, because some of the emoji actually mean different things in different languages and different cultures and even to different generations of people. So there are always efforts to try to expand the inclusion to just be more inclusive of, you know, everybody's different cultural backgrounds and experiences and to include more languages in there, too. So it is a way to expand the vocabulary of the people who have been using the traditional emoji, and they're suddenly looking through the list and they see a new one there and try to figure out how they can incorporate it into their own use. But that might be radically different from the way it was intended. So it's a really ongoing process here.
Well, and it's interesting, Stephen, to think about the kind of miscommunications, obviously, and sometimes Stephen just really hard to see what the faces are saying mm-hmm. in terms of sending an emoji. And, you know, you could send something thinking you're sending a certain kind of feeling or emotion to someone, but how they receive it could be very different.
You know, that's really true. And I'll give you a personal example. So I have many sisters-in-law, but I have one who loves to use one particular emoji, mm-hmm. and she sends it in every communication, and it's a face that's smiling and the tongue is sticking out. And every time I get that, I think, is she saying that she wants to lick my face? I mean, I really don't understand it. But I think the larger point is here, we do have a very rich vocabulary with the choices that we have, as Lauren was just saying. And so when we are using them, we should practice the art of choosing wisely, choosing smartly to communicate what it is we're trying to say and to feel. And that will take it to another level and remove the problem of me being afraid of my sister-in-law.
Well, I'm curious about what you send. I mean, here you're talking about it on the radio. What do you send back to her, Stephen?
Usually I send back a short message, you know, XOX, you know, love you, sis. But I don't play her game with her.
I got you. Well, let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. We are beginning our conversation talking about digital communications, talking a lot about emojis. I confess my use of emojis. Talking with Stephen Petro. He writes the civilities column for The Washington Post and Digital Life for USA Today. Also with us, Lauren Collister, a sociolinguist for the University Library at the University of Pittsburgh. She researches communication, identity, technology in online communities. And we have a guest waiting in the wings who wants to get rid of voicemail at work. We want to hear from you, and you can actually pick up your phone and call us at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and I see people are leaving comments on our Facebook page as well. Do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. I've been talking with Lauren Collister and Stephen Petro about digital communication and miscommunication as it applies to emojis or emoji. Joining us now is Michael Schrag, and he's a research fellow at the MIT Sloan School of Initiative on the Digital Economy. Wrote a book called The Innovator's Hypothesis. And a number of businesses are saying goodbye to voicemail. And Michael Schrag, a couple of years ago, said it's about time. And Michael, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
My pleasure.
So what's wrong with voicemail at work?
Well, some of it actually connects with what you've been discussing with emoji, which is the communication of, for the purposes of being effective, that is to say, what needs to be done, and affective, what's the emotion or feeling attached to it. And frankly, when one looks at the costs and the benefits, for a lot of people, email and texting is, or some of the social media platforms are way more effective than just, you know, leaving a message. 30-second message, 90-second message, et cetera. So voicemail was fine 25, 30 years ago. it's pretty much like, as the saying goes, putting radar on a chariot now. It's an anachronism.
And
it's good to go.
Well, it's good to go. And is that because people don't respond to voicemail, or they see it as either intrusive or, you know, kind of a pain in the neck?
Well, there's a dual aspect of this, because when voicemail came in, how many people had mobile phones? The answer is not very many. And so in most organizations now, people who are interested in that kind of communication oftentimes rely on their own devices rather than their quote-unquote office phone. So, you know, I think the whole notion, and this, I think, again, connects back to what you've been hearing, and Steve's point about personal versus professional for emoji or emoji. You say emoji, I say emoji.
Mm-hmm.
Where does one draw the line between personal and professional communications? And voicemail, it's again, in the enterprise, it might make sense. But even for people with their mobile phones, very few people, when Verizon and Sprint do the analytics on how people use their voicemail boxes, what they discover is fewer and fewer people are leaving messages, fewer and fewer people are retrieving messages. And do you know what the people who retrieve messages have in common?
What's that?
They're
old?
North of 40.
We're back to the old factor. Let me throw in something else, and then I'll get other guests in. And I know Stephen wants to play a voicemail that he got. But I wonder, too, Michael, whether the fact that telemarketers
By the way, forgive the interruption, but the idea that Stephen wants to play a voicemail sort of underscores why voicemail is going away. But please go on.
Well, exactly.
Thank you, Michael.
But I'll give him a chance to defend himself.
Please.
But I wonder, too, Michael, whether the fact that telemarketers are the ones that seem to pretty consistently use phone calls. They actually call you at home. Whether that has kind of turned people against voicemail anyway.
That strikes me more. I mean, you may not be. I think you're correct, but that's sort of like a mosquito or gnat-like irritant rather than a structural issue. I think the core of it is twofold. One is it's just bloody inefficient. It's easier to scan emails and scan texts than to play back voicemails. The other is oftentimes you run into the nuance kind of circumstance where people are leaving messages and you're afraid they can be forwarded on in ways. It's not fit for purpose. It used to be that voice was the dominant way we used media to communicate. Now it's not. It's not. It's gone from being central to peripheral and, I think, marginal. And I'm going to wager that calls like this are great. Synchronous conversational voice is fantastic. It's wonderful. Radio is wonderful. Asynchronous voicemail as opposed to podcasts, inefficient, ineffective, not worth it.
Well, go ahead, Stephen Petro. Let me give you a chance to respond, and then I do want to play the voicemail that you gave us.
Well, I'll tell you, I did a question for USA Today a couple of months ago, and it was from a younger person who was very irritated with her mother's complaints that this young woman was not listening to the mom's voicemails. And basically, I told the mom to get with the times. And I guess I have to say, you know, advice columnists get irritated by things. And this was a hot button for me, I could see after the fact, because there were just thousands of responses to that on both sides, pro and con voicemail in the personal realm, which is different,
right.
I think,
yes.
than the professional realm,
yes.
Michael. But I have to say, you know, I was called every name in the book, and part of it reflected the attitude that I have, which is it's all about efficiency. It's too much time for me to, like, do in the prompts, to listen to my voicemail, or to actually leave words. So that's kind of what I communicated. I definitely backtracked in the end, because there are times when personal voicemails especially are really important. And on my phone, I have one that came in yesterday, which I'm going to play for you quickly. But I also have three from a friend of mine who died a couple of months ago, and these go back several years. And I've saved all of these voicemails, and I love listening to her voice from time to time. So, you know, that's a tangible way that we can really connect in ways that we haven't. But so I got this voicemail yesterday afternoon, and I didn't listen to it until I was in the car on the way to the studio because I was too busy in my own head to even bother, and everyone knows that I hate voicemail. But I was really surprised by what came through.
Well, I am too, because I haven't heard it, but let's give it a listen.
How are you? I hope you had a wonderful time in the British Isles, and I thought I would try and catch you at the end of the workday. I am at home with a child who's very happy at camp, so I am home alone, which is kind of lovely. Anyways, whenever you have a momentito, jingle and let me know about your world. All is well here, and I look forward to hearing about your trip and your world in general. Lots of love. Speak to you soon. Bye.
Stephen, I kind of stepped on the lines at the very beginning. Who was that from?
So that was from a good friend of mine, Vicky, in Dallas, who I haven't talked to in a couple of weeks. And I hope it came through clear enough after that. But it was really a lovely, mm-hmm. sweet message. I got to hear her voice. She got to tell me she missed me and she loved me and what's going on with her daughter. And if she'd sent me a text, which she often does, it would have been, give me a call when you can. So there was a lot of richness in that I appreciated that, you know, and I waited a whole day to listen to, which is, you know, it's on me.
If you'll forgive my asking the question, may I ask what percentage of voicemails left have that level of vibrancy and drama on a relative basis? I mean, I just want to get a sense here. Is it 20%, 50%, or something less?
That's a good question. And, you know, I get so few voicemails these days because I think people are loath to leave them, and also they understand that they're not so welcome. But your point is, I understand your point, Michael, absolutely.
Well, Lauren, let me get you in on the conversation as well. How do you, since we're talking about voicemail, how do you see voicemail?
As Michael pointed out, voicemail is definitely asynchronous communication, and so is email, for that matter. And email is a written word intended to be read later. And they both kind of have something in common, and that is that they tend to be a little bit more formal or a little bit more stilted. And people try to get their words across in a very formal way because these are intended to be preserved. And some people, like the friend on the phone there who left that very wonderful message, I wish I would get messages like that, she do take it to the next level and have perfected the art of asynchronous communication. And it's the kind of the same way with emails. We see all these things with emails now about how to write a good, concise email and how to not ramble on forever. Say what you mean in 5 sentences or fewer in an email so that people can read it quickly. And I wonder myself if email is kind of going the way of the voicemail and becoming kind of annoying, and people don't want to spend the time to sit there and read a really long email the same way they don't want to sit there and log into their voicemail and listen to a really long, rambly message.
They'd rather read a text or get a tweet or something like that, something more efficient, Lauren?
Yeah, something a little bit quicker. You know, I know a lot of offices these days are moving towards instant messaging communication, sending quick messages back and forth conversationally between team members or office mates. You know, it works kind of similarly mm-hmm. to spoken language face-to-face. If your boss comes in to talk to you in the office, or if your colleague, you know, has a conversation with you at the water cooler, it can be faster and a little more personal than, you know, sending an email or leaving a voicemail.
Michael, does that mean that, you know, if I were to call a business, I would never, ever, ever get a human being? I mean, it sort of is this way now, where you go down that, you know, that rabbit hole of leaving messages on people's voicemail. But is that sort of the end of human contact at work?
The end of human contact. Yeah, I'm going to make a different spin on this.
Okay,
go ahead.
I
talked about effect and affect. I think there's the C word here, which is choice. I think there are times when we want to choose. And that's why I loved Steve's story about you know, mom wanting to leave a message. Mom wants to leave a message, you know, and her daughter doesn't want to hear this. You know, I think there are deeper issues associated with that, but that's for another show. I think people want the choice of leaving and consuming messages in a way that balances effectiveness of time and affectiveness of connection. There are times when I'm calling for assistance where I just want the person on the other end of the phone to do their job. There are other times I call, I'm happy to have a conversation with them. Affect and connection, human connection matters, but I want it to be a choice. In the same way I don't like people imposing, you know, their bonhomie on me, I like having choice. And we have an explosion of media here that give us more choices. And the reason why things like etiquette and linguistic study is important is that it gives us a better sense of what better choices can and should mean when we communicate and share.
And I often think, knowing that I'm essentially talking about myself here, it's mom's long messages that are so particularly annoying.
I'm not going to go there.
My son already went there. That's okay. Fair enough. Let me get
Fathers can do this too,
Marty.
Oh,
is that right? Okay, fair enough. I'm that too as well. Let me get Justin from Center City, Philadelphia to join us. Hi, Justin. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call.
You're welcome.
I really appreciate the point about choice because my job is very, very customer service heavy. It's pretty much all I do. And I have to disagree vehemently with the idea that voicemail is superfluous. I have all the tools at my disposal, call, text, and email. So when I make a call, it's for a reason. I want somebody to hear my voice for one reason or another. And if I can't get through, if I were to send an email or a text message, I would have to hang up, open an email app, or go to my computer, type up an email, and then I would have to spend, you know, who knows however long composing the email such that it would get across what I wanted to get across and the tone that I wanted to get across, whereas I could have just spent a small fraction of that time leaving a voicemail. And I think it's crucially important that we have all of these avenues available to us so that, I mean, especially for somebody like me, you know, we don't lose the human touch. And I wonder if our guests have a comment
sure.
on that.
Sure. Justin, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Michael, he's saying it is efficient. You're saying it's not so efficient. For Justin,
well,
it is.
Well, here's my problem. My problem is, and I completely empathize with the point he's making, but he's talking about it's efficient for him. I want to talk to the people who he's left the voicemails for, and are they happy? That's you know, choice cuts both ways.
What do you think about that, Lauren?
I definitely appreciate the idea of choice, and this comes back to the idea of context, too. So there are definitely some contexts in which a voice interaction is more appropriate. When you're talking to your mom, or when perhaps you're calling for a very delicate customer service issue and you want to have that personal touch. But there are some contexts in which it's just not necessary. And, you know, if it's somebody calling just to leave a voicemail that says, call me, you know, that's not exactly the context that that might lead to that sort of thing.
So, Stephen,
Marty, could I add in?
Yes,
could
please.
I add in one
yes,
point?
Go ahead.
So I agree. Well, first of all, I want to say, Michael, I wish you would leave me a voicemail. I love your voice. I don't know that you could communicate with emoji the way you do with words. But in addition to choice,
I promise you, I will never, ever, ever communicate with emoji.
Okay, thank you. But you know, in addition to choice and context, I think there's respect, and it kind of goes back to the parent and the child, but also to professional situations. You know, we want to respect the way that people take in information and communication. And so, you know, if my mom, to personalize it, you know, she's not a texter, she has a flip phone, you know, there's no way I can communicate with her other than picking up the phone or sometimes email. So I think we need to put respect into this and use different approaches for different contexts and making different choices.
Let me put something else on the table. And Michael, you have to leave us in a couple of minutes. I know this is something else that you wanted to talk a bit about, having to do with the fact that through all this new digital communication, some of it not so new, is that we often end up sharing very private information in a very public setting. Have we not learned that message yet?
Well, this is. I'm glad that you asked that. I'm going to be fascinated by the response of Lauren and Stephen to this. It's you're right. It's hardly new or novel, but it seems to be this is one of those issues that seem to be getting worse, not better. You know, my wife is a C-level person, and she hires people, and of course she checks out their Twitter streams or their Facebook page, not just their LinkedIns. And of course she's appalled by what people choose to post. And then of course it's been communicated to college graduates all over the world that, you know, people are going to check out your public posts. And yet there hasn't been many of them declined to make things private. And so I think the notion, just like we're talking about you know, a business voicemail and personal voicemail and family stuff, and where does one draw the line between personal and professional, I think these lines have not just blurred, but there's a growing expectation that what people do in their personal lives shouldn't play a role in how they're judged in their professional lives and vice versa. And I think that, frankly, poses insurmountable obstacles for both etiquette people and HR departments. I'm going to just to give the illusion of continuity here. This conversation began with emoji or
yes.
Emoji. Okay, I am here to say, because I know that you have a lot of universities in the Philadelphia area, I am here to say that by the end of next academic year, there will be a formal complaint filed in a Pennsylvania University saying that an emoji constituted a microaggression or harassment.
Oh dear. Well, I'm speechless. I don't know if there's an emoji for that.
There is, actually. Can I just mention here that there was an article in The Atlantic that I worked with a writer named Bori Lam about, and one of the things that came up was the differing perception of the emoji for the eggplant.
Yes.
So,
the infamous eggplant, yes.
Right, the infamous eggplant. And some people just see it as an eggplant, which is a vegetable, right? But it has this other meaning. And when people don't understand the whole cloud of meaning surrounding emoji like this, you can get into trouble just by either innocently misusing it or maybe purposefully misusing it in a seemingly innocent way. So I can definitely see this being a problem in the future as either people don't understand the context of emoji or as they take advantage of them.
Well, we have to take a very short break, and we have to say goodbye to you, Michael Schrage. Thanks for joining us today on Radio Times.
It was my pleasure. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Research fellow at the MIT Sloan School of Initiative on the Digital Economy. Stay with us. Much more after this short break. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We are talking about digital communication and miscommunication, emoji, emails, text, voicemail, talking with Lauren Collister. She's a sociolinguist for the University Library at the University of Pittsburgh. Also with us, Stephen Petro. He writes the civilities column for the Washington Post and Digital Life for USA Today, working on a book called Mind Your Digital Manners, Navigating Life in an Age Without Rules. We have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. Let me get Lindsay from Lansdale to join our conversation. Lindsay, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I actually have an interesting problem. I've been trying to plan an event and reach vendors, and I fill out their contact form and email because that's easiest for me, and then I don't get a response. So I call them and leave a message, and I still don't get a response. So I feel like we need to decide which way we're going to go.
You agree with that, Stephen? Is that, and sometimes you just get buried with email, so you just kind of lose track of who's trying to get in touch with you with something that you actually care about.
You know, I think in the business context, everyone should implement the same day rule, which is regardless of whether you get a voicemail or an email or a text, you should respond to it before the close of business that day. That is good business, regardless of the medium. And so, you know, the situation that the caller is presenting just seems like poor business and poor social skills on the part of that person, because you're going to lose a customer. And that's not good.
I mean, you're saying that that's really the polite thing to do and the correct thing to do.
You know, it's the polite thing, but it's also the thing that's best for your business to be responsive in that way. And sometimes, you know, sometimes I tell people, if you can't provide them the answer that they need, at least acknowledge that you have received the communication and say, I'll get back to you in a day or 3 days, whatever that is. But be present.
What do you think, Lauren?
I definitely agree. And this also affects our personal life, too. I mean, have you ever left a voicemail or even a text message for a friend and they haven't responded, even though maybe you've asked a question? And you start to wonder, well, what's wrong? Or did I offend them somehow? Are they mad at me? And just not responding sends a whole message in itself that you could have taken care of just by saying, hey, I got your message and I'll get back to you in a day or whatever. So I think it's a problem not just with business, but in personal, too.
Let's talk about ghosting. Do you know about ghosting, Stephen?
I do.
And this is apparently Sean Penn and Charlize Theron. There was some ghosting thing. One of them broke up with the other one or didn't respond to something. And that was, I guess, the end of their relationship. But ghosting is the name for really not responding, using the Casper the Friendly Ghost response, right?
It, you know, it's kind of disappearing into the ether.
Yeah.
And, you know, so here, we look at the arc of breakups, you know, 25 years ago, it was people leaving a voicemail when they knew the person was not at home. And that was seen as kind of the chicken way out. And then it's kind of moved up to texting breakups where they don't talk, use words, emoji.
Right.
And now, you know, ghosting is you just disappear. You don't say anything. And I think this is a horrible devolution of communication. And people seem to forget that even in a difficult conversation, however it's occurring, there's much to be gained to both parties in having that. And so, you know, what happened there, you know, seems really disgraceful to me. And I tend not to go there that often.
Indeed. Let me get, looks like Bruce from Reading to join our conversation. Hi, Bruce. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times. Hi, Bruce. You're on the air. All right, I'm going to pull him down, but I'll read what he says because I actually wanted to put this to you, Lauren. Bruce says, when people send him a message and they include LOL, laugh out loud, he doesn't know if it means laugh out loud or lots of loud or context has to be clear. Can you weigh in on that, Lauren?
Oh, absolutely. So LOL does usually, by most people, mean laugh out loud, but actually, it doesn't really mean that we're laughing out loud.
Right.
I mean, I don't know about you, but the last time I typed LOL to somebody, I wasn't even laughing, and it wasn't funny at all. It was basically just a basic acknowledgement that the person had sent me a message that was mildly clever. So actually, a lot of linguists have written about LOL, and it had its 25th anniversary a couple of years ago, so it got a lot of study and attention. But it really has changed from indicating real laughter to just being a signal of basic empathy between conversationalists and a sign that you've read and acknowledged their message. So lol doesn't actually mean laughing. People have changed to, you know, using the tried and true standards of ha-ha and hee-hee to indicate actually something closer to actually laughing.
Well, I'm glad
hey,
you
Marty?
Yeah, go ahead, oh, Stephen. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Could I play a quick little game with you around these abbreviations?
Okay.
I'll tell you.
I'm really bad at tests, but go ahead.
I did a column for USA Today a couple of months ago, and I asked my two nieces for the abbreviations they use most often in texting, and the nieces are 15 and 19.
Okay.
And then I asked their mom if she knew them, and she got 3 out of 10 right. So they've got a whole secret language going, and I have to say I didn't know any most of them either. So HMU.
HMU. Oh, my goodness. I have absolutely no idea. How about for you, Lauren?
Is it hit me up?
Oh.
Bingo, yes.
Wow.
This is like, okay.
You are a sociolinguist. Now go ahead, Stephen.
Yes. Lauren, please play too. D-W-A-I.
Okay. Driving with D-W-A-I?
Mm-hmm.
Driving with
Lauren?
I don't know that one.
Don't worry about it.
Don't worry
and
about
then,
it. Okay.
And then, but the one I like the best that they use all the time is I-L-Y, I love you.
Oh, I-L-Y. So that works as well. I told you I'm very bad taking tests. To you, Lauren, though, you mentioned hee-hee-ha-ha, hee-hee-hee-ha-ha-ha. Is that a generational thing or does ha-ha mean something different from hee-hee?
A lot of people, this is an individual style thing, right? So a lot of people interpret hee-hee to be a little bit more giggling or even conspiratorial laughter, and ha-ha to be a more general sign of laughter. And this goes back for centuries. So people have been writing ha-ha and hee-hee since about 1000 AD. So it's not a new phenomenon. So it's had a long time for us to coalesce our ideas about what these two things mean. So we're back to using them even in this new medium in the ways that we're familiar with.
Interesting. Stephen, do you have a position on ha-ha or hee-hee?
I guess I've always interpreted hee-hee to have a little bit more of a snarky connotation mm-hmm. to it, and ha-ha sort of a happier laughter mm-hmm. to it. But I'll defer to Lauren on the history of all of this, the etymology.
And how about caps or lowercase, Lauren? I mean, that can have also a very different meaning and intention.
Right. So traditionally, all caps, well, not traditionally, but online, all caps is intended to be an intensifier. So using caps lock is widely interpreted to mean yelling at somebody. So if you caps lock your ha-ha, that indicates that you are laughing really loudly, which adds this intensity to it. I have honestly never seen a caps locked hee-hee, but I can imagine that a sort of even an evil laugh, sort of a cackle in some sort of way, maybe for that. But that's my own interpretation. So if somebody actually does use a caps lock hee-hee, I would love to know what it means.
Well, let me get back to our callers at 1-888-477-9499. Again, we are talking about a digital communication and miscommunication with Stephen Petro and with Lauren Collister. We have Ellen calling us from Ballykinwood. Ellen, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, I have a pet peeve,
okay.
And I am all for choice in how we communicate. I think we should be able to use many, many tools depending on the situation and the context. However, some people say, oh, I never check voicemail, but you have no way of knowing that. And I think if people don't check voicemail or don't check email, that they should have that on their outgoing message so you don't waste a lot of time waiting for a response to an email or a voicemail that's never going to be checked. That's happened to me numerous times, only to find, you know, to finally reach somebody and, oh, no, I never pick up the phone at home, or I never check my voicemail. And what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, Stephen, let me toss that to you.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I have often counseled those people, such as myself, to leave an outgoing message that says, I prefer to receive communications a different way. And here is my email address, or please text me at the number that you've just called. Because, you know, if you're not picking them up and you're not telling people, you know, you're getting nowhere. So that's a very good point, caller.
Ellen, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Stephen, let me go back to you. What do you think about emails that are sent as, you know, birthday greetings and anniversary greetings and things like that? Is that, or even thank you for a lovely dinner. Is that the appropriate way to express thankfulness or congratulations?
That also is a very timely question, and I think we're in a state of flux about that. And my own attitudes have changed in the last 5 years, where I used to say almost exclusively, take the time to send a note, even if it's a short note. Pick up a pen. We all still know what pens are, and write a little note. But you know, my opinion on this now is for a casual thank you, for a small gift, maybe even for up to a weekend, it's fine to send an email, maybe even a text, mm-hmm. but take some time doing it. You know, address the person, dear Marty, thank you so much for having me as a guest today, blah, blah, blah. You know, make it in the form of a note. Don't just write thanks, because the message is more important than the medium. And I see, especially with younger people, if they're not going to do it that way, they're not going to say thank you at all. And then people are really going to get bent out of shape. So I think this is a way that etiquette is moving with the technology and the times.
We have an email from William. I'll give this to you, Lauren. He says, people are emotional creatures, whether communicating by voicemail, email, or texting. There's always an exchange of emotional currency. I teach my children that it is their responsibility to ensure that they are understood. I think it's very telling that many place more value in the convenience of their communication than why they are communicating at all. So tapping into this that what communication, I guess, is in many ways is really about this human-to-human contact.
Absolutely. And, you know, that just shows with the evolution of our language and technology that's happened. Because we are emotional creatures, because we want to be understood, we have invented and created ways that will help us do that. So the very first emoticon, I can bring some history into here, was used by Scott Fallman, who was a researcher at Carnegie Mellon University. And he used the smiley face for the very first time in an email in the 1980s. I think it was 1982. He wanted a way to mark his sarcasm or his jokes because he was offending people by accident by writing things that he meant as jokes with no way to indicate that with your tone or your voice. And he wasn't making himself understood. And so he proposed this smiley face, this, you know, colon and a parenthesis, to indicate a joke so that people would be able to understand him better. And he even like wrote a little memo to his department about this, right? So that is just the origin of this thing is indicative of our need to make ourselves understood here and how we can bend the language to do that.
Let me get Don from, looks like Princeton, to join our conversation. Hi, Don. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi there. I hope the car wash doesn't bother the sound here.
Oh, dear. I don't know what the etiquette is about that, Don, but go ahead. Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, stay in the car, Don. Stay in the car.
Hey, has anybody ever heard of LTM, laughing to myself? I've gotten that a couple of times. I'm kind of, we're all LOL right now, I
yeah.
guess, right? But RK, just using K instead of okay.
Oh,
just wondering if they...
Wow. I didn't realize that people could kick out the O in OK. LTM?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Oh, yes, you say, Stephen?
Oh, yes.
Yes, and I had a mom write me recently, you know, how much more time will it take my teenage daughter to write OK than K? And, you know, that's the wrong question I said to mom. Choose your battles wisely.
Yes.
Let go of the O there.
Yeah. Don, I appreciate the call to Radio Times.
Okay.
Lauren, can you weigh in on laughing to myself, LTM? Is that, I mean, I guess this stuff gets invented every day, right?
It's a personal thing. So somebody who might, you know, want to express that one particular thing might invent that and use it. I've actually seen that on some of those glossaries of texting language, which are often totally fallacious. But the LTM has appeared on some of those. And, you know, it's a personal use thing. Someone might make use of that extensively, and then you have to kind of adapt to their way of communicating and learn what that means for them.
But are we really talking, Lauren, about a new language or just sort of what, again, what people do to language, which is they're invented and reinvented and refine it how they want to use it?
Right. So I've heard a lot of talk about how emojis are a new language, supposedly. And just like I said before, emojis, even when you can do something like interpret Moby Dick into emoji, it's not really a language because emoji don't have all of the grammatical features and the recursivity that we're used to looking at in spoken human languages. They do have some meaning and they have been shown to have some structure, but they don't have all of those features and their meanings are really clouds and they're uncertain. So whether they're a new language, I don't think so, but they definitely represent an evolution of our language to adapt to the modern technology that we use to communicate these days.
And Stephen, we're almost out of time here, but I'm assuming that manners, you know, behaving well also changes with the times and changes with how we use this language we've been talking about.
Absolutely. And the whole reason this digital life column came about at USA Today was I started getting so many questions from people who were confused about all the things we've been talking about, when to text, when to use emoji, bread and butter letters via email. So it's we're kind of in this period of enormous technological change, and we're trying to stay up with it in terms of our social interactions. And so that's the challenge for right now.
Well, my thanks to both of you for joining us today on Radio Time. Stephen Petro, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
You're welcome. He writes the Civilities column for the Washington Post and Digital Life for USA Today, has a forthcoming book called Mind Your Digital Manners, Navigating Life in an Age Without Rules. Lauren Colliser, thank you very much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. She's a sociolinguist for the University Library, and that's at the University of Pittsburgh. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about this program, including how to send us an email. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Bilder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thank you so much for joining us.